8 p.m. This is Radio Ghana.
Behind the news, live on Radio Ghana in Accra. You can also get us live on all our original FM stations across the country and at gbcghana.com. I am Abraham Asari. Internet Sedition DSP Gifty Tehuda goes back to BNI. Is it another arrest? What is the state of work on the Volta University and Upper West Regional Coordinating Council lauds work of journalists in the region but asks them to continue to uphold professional ethics? It is Behind the News and it is live on Radio Ghana in Accra. You can send us a text 0264418767. The Bureau of National Investigations, BNI, has rearrested the head of the Commercial Crimes Unit of the Police CID, Gifty Tehuda. DSP Tehuda had been freed following a court order yesterday. DSP Tehuda is being investigated for her alleged role in the cocaine-turned baking soda case. Koshi Tehuda is the husband of DSP Gifty Tehuda, and he is on the line now. Good evening to you, Mr. Tehuda, and welcome to Radio Ghana tonight.
Good evening. Good evening.
Were you with your wife today after her release?
Sorry?
Can you tell us where your wife is right now?
Oh, she's with the BNI headquarters. She's being locked up.
You know why?
Yeah, I don't know why. They just said that when we finished the court processing today, in fact, her immediate boss came and said that the Director General of CID wanted to see her before she goes home. So we all went in a convoy to the head office, that is the headquarters. So she met the Director General. They had their talk about 20 minutes or so. And then she came out and said that he asked her to write whatever they have discussed on paper. And she report all that happened during the 217 days that she's been in the custody of BNI. So she came and then was taken to her office. She wrote all that and then sent it back to the Director General of CID, Mr. Prosper Aglo. So when she got there, according to her, then there was a police, senior police officer also, who came to say that the IGP has directed that the BNI wants her back to come and to give a further statement. So that was right in the office of the Director General of CID. So she got confused about that, but they said, okay, her superior boss, that is the immediate boss, said, okay, she should go at least listen to what they want to say and then write a further statement. So then we all descended from the top, and then they took her in their own car, and I followed them to the BNI 37 Annex. So when we went there, about 10, 15 minutes, they took her from there to the headquarters. Then she called me on the way in their car. She called me and said, well, as you follow, they said, you should go and fill a form. And then after filling the form, the expectation was that she'll be released. But by the time I got to the headquarters, she called me again and said, now they said they have rearrested her. So it means that now they cannot carry me under arrest.
Okay, I'll come back to you, Mr. Tehuda. We understand her lawyer is on the line, and he has to go away quickly. So if you could hold on briefly, I'll come back to you.
Okay, all right.
Lawyer Oliver Jeble, he's the one, you know, taking care of Gifty Tehuda's case. She is his client. Good evening to you, Mr. Jeble.
Good evening.
Have you seen your client today?
Yes, I saw her in the morning, around 11:30 in the morning, when she went through the final processes at the court premises before she was released.
And have you been told that she's been rearrested?
Yes, I am presently at the close by the BNI headquarters where she's been detained now, following a purported rearrest.
What have you found out?
Yes, what I found out so far is she was more or less lured back into the BNI head office, purported to sign some form, and was finally told that she was rearrested in this.
You call it purported rearrest. Is it that you think it is unlawful to have had her arrested again?
If she's been rearrested on the basis of the same allegations, the result of which have been granted bail by the Superior Court of Judicature, then definitely I have a problem. I have an issue with the legality of this arrest.
Is it not possible that new evidence might have come up?
Yeah, that is why I'm carefully saying that if it is on the basis of the same allegation, I find an illegality in there.
So, have you been allowed to see her?
Well, interesting. I was turned out at the gate. I was just told I could not get in.
You've not been told when you can go back and see her?
No, I wasn't told, but I will make an attempt to see her tomorrow, if it's possible.
Can you secure a bail for her this weekend?
Well, it is normal for officials, say at a BNR or police, to grant inquiry bail, not necessarily the court. So I'll try to do that. If it is not possible, I will wait to see what I can do in court next week.
That means that the weekend cannot prevent you from securing a bail for her?
The weekend should not prevent me from securing bail for anybody in detention.
Okay, thank you so much for talking to us tonight, Mr. Jeble. We wish you all the best.
Welcome.
So, Mr. Tehuda, your wife hasn't told you anything else? You don't have any contact with her since she went into BNI custody?
Say it again.
You don't have any contact with her again? I mean, since she went into custody?
No, I've not had any contact. In fact, I followed them with my car, and then right from the BNI telephone, they drove her. They were using the siren car. They managed to, whisk their way very fast to the head office. That's the headquarters. So I followed them. By the time I got to the gate, they refused to let me in because, so I was at the gate, bringing my horn, letting them in. They just came and opened their small gate, and then they closed it. Finally, they came back and told me that I should go there. They cannot allow me in. So it was when I was in the car that I had a call, which was unknown. Apparently, maybe she hasn't got her own phone with her. So I'm sure she's one of the officers' phone there. She called me. It was unknown. She said, well, they say they have re-arrested her. So I should just go home. And that, in fact, so as I speak to you now, I'm with my lawyer here, and we are brainstorming as to what to do next.
She did not tell you why she decided to re-arrest her.
No, she not tell me why, because unfortunately, she even wanted to get back to the officer. In fact, her immediate boss, they said they will not allow her to do so. So I don't really understand this, really. I don't know, I understand the whole plot. I don't know whether it's, I would say it's a plot. Because right from the registered office, we finished, everything was nice. The superior, immediate superior was there and said the director general wanted to see her before she goes home. So, of course, the director general said he wants to see her as a subordinate. We have no alternative then to go. So we went there. So it was when she finished writing the statement that the boss, the director, asked her to do. Right in her office, somebody came from according to her, from the IGP's office, and said that they said they wanted her to go and write a further statement. So in the, further statement, reluctantly she didn't want to go because she thought that she could do that on Monday because she was even asked to report at the BNI on Monday. So she said she wasn't feeling well in the first place. She was weak. She had not eaten anything since that morning. And then as I speak to her, I've not still eaten anything since morning. So we're all together with her until they took her away to the BNI office. And here I am. My wife has been taken back. I don't understand.
Have you sent her food this evening? Have you tried to send her food? Something to eat?
I have not. I've just said I've not eaten anything since morning because I was waiting to take her home and have our supper or dinner together. But here again, they have taken away and she is gone there without eating anything. And meanwhile, for the past 17 days, she's not been eating anything. And now, I don't know, I have a feeling perhaps, maybe my wife would just have to die in their hands. They don't know what they are doing. They may not want to kill my wife. They just want to kill my wife. That's what I can say for now.
But what advice is your lawyer giving you? You tell me you're with your lawyer right now.
Yeah, I'm with the lawyer. He's also being refused to see her this evening. So we are here brainstorming to see what next to do. Tomorrow is Saturday. And in fact, they brought her in here around 6 p.m. or 6:30 thereabouts, almost around 7 p.m. or so. And we don't know what happens tomorrow. So my lawyer is contemplating coming again tomorrow to see her and find out exactly what the charges are for what reasons why they are still they are arresting her, or what reason they have for the rearrest, I don't know. So tomorrow maybe he may come to see her and see what is happening.
Zeta Hodawi, thank you very much for talking to us. We wish you all the best.
Thank you very much, my love. Thank you very much. Bye bye.
Thank you. Good night. Yeah. That was Kwashi Tahoda, husband of DSP Gifty Tahoda. You're listening to Behind the News. The program is live on Radio Ghana in Accra and all regional FM stations of the GBC. Now, the debate is still raging on as to whether the Volta and Bono Afro universities will see the light of day. The government's position is that everything is on course to get the universities to be fully functional. Behind the News finds out from the Volta Regional Minister Joseph Amenuode the state of work so far on the university. Good evening to you, Mr. Amenuode. Welcome to Radio Ghana tonight.
Thank you. Good evening. How are you?
Fine. Hope you are fine too. Can you tell us the progress of work on the Volta Regional University?
Yeah, I think when we talk about the Volta Regional University, we are talking of progress of work. We are talking of the legal and paperwork and then the physical work. As you are aware, the committee appointed by His Excellency the President to plan and implement the university submitted their report to the President yesterday. Earlier on, Parliament passed the bill establishing the two universities. So when we talk of progress of work, we say that as far as the legal framework for the establishment of the two universities, that has been completed. Now, about physical infrastructure, at the Volta Regional University, we had always said that the university will start from what we call incubatory facilities, far as the main campus, the permanent campus, will be constructed. As of now, we have the residences of the staff, that's the principal staff, almost ready. We are rehabilitating some structures for the vice chancellor and the pro vice chancellor in whole. We have constructed 4 bungalows for staff. We have the classrooms or the lecture rooms ready. We have the administration ready. We are almost ready with the students' hostel, which will be taking about 200 students. We have other facilities, about 34 apartment buildings ready for occupation by staff. All these.
How about lecture halls?
Yeah, I've mentioned that we have lecture halls ready.
See, sir, with
that has been constructed and then it's ready. We have a hostel that's almost completed, ready to house about 200 students. So we are almost set for the beginning of the university. All we are waiting for is for the appointment of the council that would do other appointments, that will make other appointments, which will be subsequent to the beginning of the planting of the first batch of students. So I will say, as of today, we are almost set for the start of the university.
How many campuses has this university?
Yeah, the law provides for 2 campuses, one at Hull and another campus at Hohoe.
So which of the 2 campuses has the facilities you have just mentioned?
I was just talking about the Hohoe campus. The Hohoe campus, we are planning to start the incubatory facilities at the Uncle Sekaya's buildings that are no more being used because the disease has been eradicated. So we have the facilities, lecture rooms, offices, laboratories available for us to use. We have signed an MOU with the Ministry of Health for us to use those facilities as interim facilities for the university campus at Hohoe.
So does that mean that this year you're going to the university is going to start full swing?
Yeah, as you are aware, the start of the university is the prerogative of the council. And as soon as the council is put in place, they will decide. But I am hoping that with the facilities we have in place now, and with the legal framework and all things ready, it will be very, very possible for the university to start this year. But that decision will be taken by the council.
Have you cited the report that was presented to the president? You've seen it?
Excuse me?
Have you seen the report that was given to the president yesterday?
Well, I haven't seen it, but I have, since I was part of the preparation, I have a fair idea of what is in it.
Can you share them with us?
No, it's the normal thing of what the university, what is the nature of the university, the programs that it should have, and what do you call it, campuses, number of students, and those kind of things that normally are in the planning of a university.
So let's go over them, the courses. What kind of courses?
Basically, they're going to have, there are about eight faculties. I don't have the report right in my front now, but I think about eight faculties and about two colleges. I can't be very specific. But they're going to deal with nursing, midwifery, medical school, dentistry, all the health and allied sciences, radiography, and all those ones. Yeah, so I can't give it to you off my head now.
Does that mean that the whole government hospital is likely to be turned into a teaching hospital?
Not
since you're talking about medical school.
Become a teaching hospital, and government has already secured funding to that effect for the upgrading of the whole and hopefully hospitals.
How soon is that going to start? You see, funding has been secured already.
Yeah, I think the Ministry of Health, I've been informed reliably that procurement process is almost complete for that to start.
Has there been any challenge, or have there been any challenges, you know, in the work of whoever, you know, the government on this project so far?
Well, I think the main challenge had been expectation management. When it was announced that government was going to establish a university in the Volta region, many people thought that it's as simple as just putting up a university. So the general feeling was, for 3 long years, you have not been able to do anything. You are deceiving the people of the region. But as His Excellency put it rightly yesterday at the presentation, a university is not something that you just create. It is an international organization. It is something that needs to be properly planned and properly implemented. So our people actually felt that it took so long for us to reach this far. But I think that now that it's almost a reality, we have surmounted that challenge. Apart from that, I think everything is moving in the right direction.
Well, you talk about expectation management, but was it not because maybe you gave the hint, you know, that it was going to start very soon, and that's why people thought, you know, you should be able to meet that deadline that you were setting?
You know, the manifesto says that the NDC would establish two universities, and then all of a sudden, everybody was like, when are they going to make the first admission? And that is what I said, that we should have been able to explain that it would take more than 2 years. And we didn't do that effectively.
Because you also didn't know that it had to take some time to have it legalized and all that.
We knew that, but I think our people were not. We didn't explain to them that we had to go through the legal processes and things. Mind you, this university is not going to be a university college. It is a university from start, and so there is a need to put all things in the proper legal framework so that we have what we call a university directly established and not affiliated to another university for, say, 10 years before it becomes independent. All these things take some time because of its uniqueness. It's not like having a university that is affiliated to another university which you could have started almost immediately.
But I'm sure you... Okay, please go ahead.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that the good news is that we have surmounted all those and are almost ready to take off.
And I'm sure you prefer that it takes off before the elections in December.
We come again?
You prefer that the university takes off before the elections in December?
That is my hope. And I believe that is possible.
Okay. You say that is possible, but can you tell us what is left to be done?
As I said, a university is an independent body. All government will do is to give it the legal framework and establish it and then get a governing council. From then on, the governing council takes over the responsibility of what should be done when.
All right.
So as of now, we have the law establishing the university. The planning committee has done its work. Now, His Excellency the President has some duties to perform in establishing the governing council. It's going to be made up of various organizations, and they will be invited to send their representatives. And when this is done, the governing council will now go on to appoint the various principal officers. And these are the people who will now decide on when the university would start, when to begin admissions, when to do whatever. Because as I said, from then onwards, the university is an independent institution. So from then onwards, the governing council will take the day-to-day responsibilities of the place.
All right, Mr. Manoa. We'll
be deciding on what to do and what not to do.
We thank you so much for tonight. Thank you for talking to us. Have a good night.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for talking with me.
Right. Joseph Amenowode is a Vote Regional Minister. You're listening to Behind the News. The program is live. You can send us a text, 026-441-8767. Well, every election year presents its own challenges, and for media people, reporting on the events as they happen is very important, yet doing so effectively and on a difficult terrain cannot be glossed over. Journalists in the Upper West Region are presented with some of these challenges. However, they've been admonished to be very professional in their reportage and to be careful about sensationalism. The Upper West Regional Minister's concern is that journalists reporting from the region should focus on development issues and what will bring peace. How can media people be helped to do this well, and what are their challenges, especially with the region? Cesar Kale is a Deputy Upper West Regional Minister, and he's on the line. Good evening to you, Mr. Kale. Welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, my brother, and good evening to our cherished listeners.
So, how do you assess the performance of media men in your region?
Well, thank you very much, my brother. Indeed, to be very sincere with you, our media professionals in this region have been able to live above reproach in respect of their, media profession. We have enjoyed working very well over the years with all the media houses in this region. And that is why, if you monitor very well, you realize that we haven't had any confrontation, we haven't had any problems at all between the media and the general public, because they have been very, very much circumspect on their reportage and other issues. So that is why during the press worry that the regional minister, organized for the media this evening, we actually admonished them, as has been done, every year, that it is good that we always report whatever we see, we always report whatever we hear, But the media should be very, very circumspect, because we are in a very crucial election year. And much will depend on the media if actually we'll have peace in the region. Because today, the electronic media, for instance, is very much popular. And we have our listening audience, you know, much of them actually listen to the radio. And sometimes they make judgment out of whatever they listen. So if our media professionals do their work very well, censor whatever information they get before they put it out into the public domain, I believe that we'll be going a long way to stem the tide as far as, you know, violence and disturbances are concerned.
In spite of that, your region is considered generally as peaceful. Do you not think that the media in the region have contributed to that state of affairs?
Yes, that's why I indicated that the media, we need to actually, the regional minister commended the media for their tremendous role, the support and the cooperation they have had, especially with the regional administration. And also, the professional actors that they have exhibited, you know, within the last year is so much cherished. And he used occasion again to acknowledge them, to be circumspect, demonstrate high professional ethics, decency, fairness, and respect for one another's view. He indeed asked them to serve as, you know, fire extinguishers who will be able to cool down or quench any blazing political, you know, fire. Because if the media sensationalize any latest issue, then of course it will jeopardize our fragile peace that we are having. And for us, we are so lucky that we have very, very mature media fraternity led by their president, Mr. Fovia. So they have been doing their things, you know, in unison. Whatever the media want to do, especially if it borders on national security or regional security, do you need to even consult before they even put certain information out there for the conversation of the general public? And I think that that has actually greatly contributed to the peace and the development, smooth development that we're having in the region. He really told them that the government has done a lot of things. The Better Ghana agenda has really caught up with the Upper region. And a number of developments have actually come to the region, spanning from electricity, water, education, you know, agri, health. A lot of infrastructure has actually come to the region. And for that matter, we should be concerned with the issues that will rather bring more development, that will rather fill the loopholes, but not on sensational issues that will actually jeopardize the key that we actually have.
Is that to say that you think the media there are not reporting on development issues?
No, they are doing that. You know, if somebody is doing well on something, it doesn't mean that you cannot tell a person that, my good friend, you are doing very well, but I want to urge you to double your effort so that we'll get more. You know,
what specific concerns do you have with the way the media, you know, personnel go about their duties in your region?
Well, the concerns are not much, but one of the, you know, important concerns I have is on our radio stations. You know, many times some of our youth will just go and buy an airtime and begin seeing whatever they want. And then you see a counter, you know, a counter radio discussion also coming on, especially us, the NDC, we are doing our primaries. We are going to have our primaries on the 21st. And all the aspirants are doing their own campaigns. But the concern is that we think that the media should be censoring whatever announcement, whatever, you know, bookings they come to do. Because if somebody brings an announcement which may, you know, trigger some kind of confusion, then of course it is proper for such an announcement to be, you know, either reframed or maybe rejected. And also people even coming to speak on air, we should ensure that there are people who are men of integrity who will not say something that will turn Ghana to Rwanda. We know the history of Rwanda. What happened? It was just through media, you know, discussions that triggered that whole confusion. So we think that the our radio stations should be very, very circumspect in granting, you know, various political groupings, various leadership to speak on behalf of their people. If anybody is on air, then you can attest to this. Even in Accra, in Kumasi, what has happened in the past, people going on air openly, castigating seriously some important leaders in this country. So I think that is the concern I have. And if that concern is addressed, I think that we'll have a violence-free election in this year's election.
Okay, I would guess if you could hold on briefly, Mr. Cesar Kale. Phobia Bajing is a GGA regional chairman in the region and is online. Good evening to you, Phobia. Welcome to Behind the News. So tell us, what are the main challenges, you know, with reporting from the Upper West region?
Hello.
Yep, you're on air.
Yeah, the challenges are numerous. Yes. We end up doing foreign relations
Phobia, can you reduce hello Phobia, can you hear me? Please reduce the volume on your radio set.
I'm saying that we are doing foreign relations for politicians. We are not doing
I'm sorry, can you reposition yourself and speak a bit louder? Maybe you can move away from your radio set. I'll be grateful. I'll continue it off. Behind the News is live on Radio Ghana. I'm afraid we have lost Phobia. We'll try and get back to him. So, Mr. Kale, but we've had reports from some of our men, media men there, about the regional hospital. Can you tell us what is happening to the regional hospital project?
Yeah, in fact, that was one of the concerns the minister actually raised. He indeed admitted that we have been very slow with the regional hospital because of a technical hitch, but he expressed government's commitment to actually construct the regional hospital.
Can you explain that technical hitch, Mr. Kale?
Yeah, we do know that the regional hospital is not only Upper West. There were about 8 new hospitals that were going to be constructed. The sod was cut concurrently for all of them for construction to begin. But we know the financiers who were supposed to mobilize the funds to actually start the project, you know, came from Egypt, the Egypt groups. So there was a technical hitch of getting the funds to start the project. But after that happened, His Excellency the Vice President assured us that alternative arrangements are being made to source funds to start the project. Recently, when he came to cut the sod for this GSOL, that was one of the major concerns that was raised. And he actually stated unequivocally that government is seriously committed to ensure that Upper West and the other districts and regions get this regional hospital.
But if you can explain to me, Mr. Cesar, Mr. Kale, why was the sod cut when funds for the project were not ready?
Yeah, no. The funds, but you know of the Egyptian crisis. You know what happened in Egypt. The financiers, I mean those who were mobilizing the funds, were even, you know, locked up here. They could not even travel to Egypt, let alone to follow up with the finances. So as I speak to the people come to the site, you realize that the whole place has been cordoned, the whole ground has been leveled, and they were actually just, you know, continuing with the project until that, you know, crisis.
So now you found
man will always propose and God will dispose. So I don't think that idea has been abandoned.
Okay.
It's going to definitely see daylight.
Have you found alternate funding?
Yeah, that's what I'm telling you, that we are not sure. Because recently when the Vice President came, he was asked that question. Mm. And he assured all and sundry that government is indeed committed to do that project. And prosperity will judge all of us if we come to do a fanfare shortcutting here and finally, you know, abandon the project. I think that will be unfortunate.
But as you speak,
I'm highly optimistic that the project definitely will come to life.
As you speak, you cannot tell when it's going to take off.
Well, that is why it's now becoming very difficult for especially we politicians to peg time frame. immediately you state that, oh, next month, on this date, the project will start, and it doesn't take off. You know, your opponents will begin using that as a political point on you. So sometimes you need to tread cautiously. Let's wait, as we have been assured, that let's always hope upon hope that we will definitely get it. Because nobody will joke.
But is it that you have a bit... I'm sorry, sir, but is it...
a health care system for our people. So nobody is going to joke with us.
Is it that you have a date in mind, you are aware of a certain date, but you would not want to put
it
out?
As I told you, I'm aware that plans are far advanced to ensure that the contractors come back to site. But as I'm saying, if I tell you today, you will be the very person who question you. You say, ah, see that you said this. But you know, we are human beings. We cannot, you know, determine events vividly. That's why I don't want to say that I'm aware that on this date it's going to begin.
Is it that you've learned some lesson, you know, with regard to making promises?
As for life, it's a process. And at every stage, you must learn some lessons. You know of what is happening, especially with some of the important programs that government wanted to do, like the STS and the rest. You know, you saw what actually happened. And you're on your station. You know how our opponents are taking us on. As if it is a deliberate attempt to deceive, you know, the good people of this country. But I don't think that any government, especially with the kind of president we have, his pedigree alone, I don't think that you want to deceive Ghanaians that I want to do this project and yet has not done it. Yeah, so I think that the question of the regional hospital is something that is dear to my heart even more than some of those who may be making some of those noise.
Okay, Mr. Kali, just briefly, I'll come back briefly. We'll just talk briefly about this hospital and I'll let you go. So Pobia Bajing is back on the line. Pobia, good evening again to you. The question I asked is just this. Is it difficult reporting from the Upper West region?
Yes, it's really very difficult to be a reporter in this region.
Why?
It is just like you are forgotten when you are brought to the Upper West region.
You are forgotten by whom?
You know, my experience is that we are not able to get to rural areas to bring real stories that affect the life of the people. We end up doing public relations work for regional ministers or the politicians in general. They carry us to an assignment. After that, you are carried back. You are not able to make any follow-up story.
Why are you not able to do that? As a journalist, I think you look for the stories yourself. You have a way of getting your sources, you know, story ideas. Who am I blaming for that, for not being able to do that?
No, you know, you see, I think those of the media management in Accra, the state media, they should have shame of what is happening in the region. Because they are not able to resource us to move to the rural areas to bring the real stories that affect the people. And whether we like it or not, Ghana is a rural country. And if we were bringing the real stories to the to the notice of government and other donor countries, Ghana would have been a place of paradise today. But we are not able to do that. You only end up, the regional minister is going somewhere, he facilitates your movement to the place, back to the office. That is all. You are not able to make up the need to have stories.
So, without the regional minister's vehicle, you are unable to do any work, on your own?
No, yes, you know, it is difficult to move out from the regional capital to rural areas. Looking at the nature of our roads and the remote nature of the place, it is not very easy.
So, apart from, you know, reports that you file on the regional minister's itinerary and all that, you are not able to do anything much. That's what you're saying.
You say?
Apart from following the regional minister around, you are unable to do anything on your own, much on your own.
Yeah, we are able to do little, not much. We should have liked to do much of it, but we are not able to do that because it is even not only Upper West region, as I'm saying. Even across other regions, it also facing similar problems or challenges.
What kind of stories do you think are there that you would have loved to do, but for lack of because of the lack of transport and all that, you are unable to do them?
But my brother, can you get down to Royal Areas and see what it is? Sometimes you don't even know what you write. Once you go to a place, they don't have water. You go to a place, they don't have a health facility. You get to a place, when it comes to address, there's nowhere to near this thing. What would I say? Facilities to promote agriculture. You see, so this is, even when you look at the cultural aspect, there are still yet a bit people in this system. You see, and we need to collect
I'm sorry, but I think that it's not fair to refer to your people as yesterday people. Hello, can you hear me?
Hello?
Can you hear me, Pobia?
Yes.
I'm saying that I don't think it's fair to refer to your people as yesterday people.
No, I'm not saying the yesterday people, it means the practice. The practice that is done is not modern, you know. We need to bring all this into...
What is modern? What is modern to you, Pobia? What is modern? Can you define modern?
Yes, what? Modern in the way that is universally accepted. Practices that are universally accepted. Human rights abuses, you know.
You don't think it's important to refer to a group of people as yesterday people?
Oh, I'm still talking of yesterday's practices, you see. And there are still people who practice yesterday's practices.
So can you tell me the kind of practices you're talking about?
You see?
Can you tell me the kind of practices you are referring to as yesterday?
I am telling you that, mm-hmm. You know, people don't even see why they should send girls to school. And
okay.
In some areas here. And, you know, I read a story on triplets.
Yes.
Yes, in some communities, if you have, you give them to triplets,
yes.
You either kill one, or you the woman must live with the triplets to relocate.
Okay.
You see, it shouldn't be that way.
I understand. Okay, just hold on.
I understand.
Yes, I
think that's what about not being able to follow up to get what the impact is.
Okay. Okay, you belong to the state media, right? You belong to a state media. I don't want you to mention the media house, but you are a state media person.
You are saying, I'm not getting you clear.
I'm saying, do you belong to a state media house, a public... Can you hear me? Okay, but let me go back to Mr. Kali. Mr. Kali, good evening. I'm sorry,
hello,
but...
Hold on, man.
No, Pobia, I'll come back to you, please. Just let me speak to the Deputy Minister. Mr. Kali, are you aware of the kind of challenges that media men in your region, you know, have, as Pobia is talking about?
The issue I'm talking about is not about this thing, but I'm telling you that we are facing a lot of challenges in this region.
I get that clear. I just want to find out from the Minister whether he's aware about the challenges that you media men are facing in your region. So if you could just hold on briefly, Pobia.
Okay, you can find out from here.
Yeah, Mr. Kali, please go ahead. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello, my brother. If it is the predicaments of the media and the practitioners in this region, you know, maybe talking about the general challenges, as you have even mentioned in other regions, we know there's no situation that is perfect. Of course, the media, by all means, will have challenges. One typical example I know, that the media sometimes they complain about will be mobility, because the villages and the districts are far apart, and sometimes if, as you said, if not the minister or the deputy or maybe there's an official, you know, program, it's difficult for some of them to move to the hinterlands to do their own stories. But you see, in this world, we must always try to live, you know, above our challenges. The journalists, as I know, have a duty themselves to even lose for stories. And we know of journalists who have been using their own resources to even lose for salt. And it has made them very prominent in this country. So yes, I understand. And I know there are challenges in the system. But that should motivate them to live above reproach. And that will make them even great and strong. Because we know the region is the poorest, you know, among all the regions. West is a very young region, which is still coming up, which is still making do with the few facilities and resources available. But that is not to say that we cannot do our work if we have these challenges that are with us. Even those of you in Accra, you know of your challenges. Yes, so we know.
Okay.
The media people have challenges.
All right, we thank you very much for being with us tonight. And if there is any way you can assist the media men in your region who are having challenges, I'm sure that you'll be ready to do that.
Yeah, hello.
Yes.
You see?
I'm sure that you in your own small way, you can find a way of assisting them.
Oh, yes. We are trying to see how best we put measures in place to help our media personnel here to be more active and more proactive in doing their jobs. For instance, if the RCC is able to get a minibus for the media, at least they'll be able to move on their way to and fro to any place they want to, you know, do any development
or
whatever it is.
Or one motorbike to each media house.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying, that these are things that all of us have been concerned with. But again, you don't just start competing it when you're not really with some of these things.
Okay.
You must be double sure that we have had them. Then we say, well, Upper West, we are also, because I'm aware of some regions, all over for some people in the Eastern region, as we know, I think what really bad for the media, we are aware of it. And some other regions are also trying their best. We are also finding ways and means to ensure that we get something that can help our brothers to be able to do their job. Because if they can do more stories, they can bring more, you know, things in the dark out, it will go a long way to actually develop the region and bring the region to limelight.
Okay, well, thank you very much for being with us tonight, Mr. Kali.
Yeah, but hello.
Yes.
But I want to, if you give me this small time to say this, that even as we enter the campaign season, I want to admonish our media brothers to always double cross check their facts and give fair opportunities to all parties. You know, this year's election will put all hands on deck to ensure balanced, free and fair elections. All stakeholders, especially chiefs, opinion leaders, religious leaders, and our political leaders, have a crucial role to play. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, sir, and have a good night. Cesar Kale, the Deputy Upper West Regional Minister. Back to you, Pobia Bajin, GGA Regional Chairman for the Upper West Region. I just want to give you a brief opportunity to explain again what the issues you were referring to when you said certain practices are yesterday practices. Hello, Pobia, can you hear me? Pobia, can you hear me? I'm afraid we do not have Pobia Bajin, who is the Upper West Regional GGA Chairman. You're listening to Behind the News. The program is live on Radio Ghana. Here are some of your text messages. PK Promise in Sawam says, gender equality, the effect is what's happening now in the cocaine saga. This case must reach its roots. Jacob Womampong, the two universities are taken off at last. It's a country that gains a sardine in war. Kudos to Atai and his team for the two new universities, and shame on the detractors. Issa Tamale, community health nurses are not treated fairly at all. We are classified as auxiliary nurses when we contribute almost 60% to the health delivery system in Ghana. We find it difficult to also upgrade ourselves to the diploma level. God help us. Ilyasa in Tamale, on what basis must the BNI rearrest DSP Mawenyaga? Isn't that in contempt of the court? The attitude of the BNI must be condemned universally. Baba Musa UDS, the Minister of Justice and Attorney General, must allow coup heads to prevail in the government and concentrate on building a better Ghana. Gorton says the police service is aware that any substance sent to the court must be retested. Napoleon Ntumu, President Natamu, so far so good. Azaz in Wa, the media in Upper West should keep up the good work they are doing for the region. We are proud of the president. 2012 will be a landslide victory. No wahala, no name to that. Zadok Aufu. There is so much propaganda on these two universities. Stop this NDC. This one, no wonder journalists are silent on important national issues. Honorable Caesar. I'm sorry, I'm not clear about this. You're listening to Behind the News live on Radio Ghana in Accra. You can also send us a text to 026-441-8767. And now to the last item for tonight. Well, after the World Summit for Children in 1990, one line that stood out in the agreement by world leaders for children is putting children first. Since that time, the world has made some progress on behalf of children. However, bringing up the concerns of children to help advance their cause is important on all occasions. For some child rights activists, sometimes children are left out entirely when the issues should come up. A recent example is when some senior media personnel met the president. Emmanuel Ashon is with the Children and Youth in Broadcasting, a young people's development advocacy group. He has joined us in the studio as we look at the issue. Emmanuel, good evening. Welcome to Behind the News. So what exactly are your concerns with regard to the encounter that the senior editors had with the president?
Good evening, Abraham, and good evening to your listeners. It's good to finally find a voice to talk about the issues that we long the end to talk about, especially when our senior editors met the president. I think generally when you look at issues of young people in the country, they are of essence because young people form a significant portion of our population. As per the 2010 population and housing census that came out, you are yet to get the disaggregated results, but from reports we have had out of the provisional results that came out, a significant number of our population are formed by young people, and so it is important that the media highlights the issues of these ones. And the media, as we have heard from time to time, mirrors what is in society, and society is not just about issues of politics. I think politics is of essence in society, but society cannot be restricted to partisan politics, and so it is important that when issues or such opportunities bring themselves, we are able to highlight fairly the issues of society, which includes the issues of young people. And I think, in my humble opinion, that was absent when the president met our senior editors.
You would have loved to hear something, you know, a question on issues that concern children. Can
Absolutely.
You tell me which kind of concerns would you have loved to have them, you know?
Yeah, I think there are several of them. I don't think 5 minutes will even be enough to talk about the issues that affect young people. There are issues of education. You look at it right from the basic level to the second cycle level to the tertiary level. We are facing a number of challenges, especially when you look at the basic level. There are generally issues about the capitation grants that has generally increased enrollment rate. But if you look at the quality of education, it's still in question. When you look at the results that comes out every year, about the BEC results, there are a significant number of children who are unable to gain admission to the second cycle level, and that is a worrying issue. So if you have a country where we have a cutoff point, I think we need to maintain some quality. That is good. We need to have some cutoff point. But I dare say that sometimes it feels that there is some official conspiracy to cut down the number of young people who get to a certain level, because we know in the first place that the number of children who come out of the BEC system or our basic schools are unable. Not every one of them will get a seat at the second cycle level. So somehow we find, I don't want to call it an excuse, to cut down the number who will get there. So you see that a certain pool of young people
but
are able to make
we also want quality.
Absolutely. I agree with you, but I am saying that the real reason behind this is because not every one of them will get a space in our senior high schools. So suppose, and I know generally in society, not everybody will be on the same scale. So there are those who may not perform so well. So for such people, what social support system do we have in place for them? Do we condemn them to society so that these young people will just go to study and they won't have anything to do? And I guess somehow that dovetails into our general unemployment rate in the country. Those are issues that are unacceptable, and it increases even the crime rate in our country. So if you decide to leave such issues out when you are interacting with the number one gentleman of the land, then you generally see it as a not so, so important issue.
If you had the chance, if you, the president was standing here and yeah. What kind of question would you have left, or would you want to ask him?
Yeah, I think generally, even on this issue of education, there are several questions that comes out. Like, for instance, as a president, when you came in, how many number of children were qualifying to get to this second cycle level before you came into power? Now that you've come to power, how many children are getting that qualification? How many number of facilities have you been able to put in place for these children? What is the general quality of education at this level? So even with education and at the basic level alone, there are several questions, not to talk about the tertiary level of education, where we are dealing with issues of even relevance and the cost of tertiary education in the country. I guess you heard from Nooks earlier in the day when they had a press conference and they had issues with the removal of subsidies on fuel prices and those ones who are going to have direct impact on them. Last year, they had to hit the streets because they didn't accept the rates at which their school fees had been raised. That is even a small portion of the bigger problem, because when you go to the tertiary, the privately owned tertiary institutions, it's even worse. So there are several issues that even on the front of education but, alone, yes, you can put to the president.
You looks like your main concern is about education.
It's not just about
what
education.
What other concerns do you have about young people?
I think generally, if you look at opportunities that exist for young people, I think there is no doubt that in our in this generation, there are several opportunities that exist for young people. But first of all, you need to build the capacities of these young people. That's why I seem to be concentrating much more
so
on education.
So this year is an election year.
Absolutely.
We'll be going to the polls to elect the president and parliamentarians and all that.
Yeah.
What kind of young, or how do you expect young people's issues to come up, you know, in the various, you know, interactions and debates that will be in the political, you know, campaigns, I must say.
I think first of all, we need to realize the fact that young people's issues are important. Young people are key stakeholders who should be engaged in this process. Once you engage the young people, you are able to deal with majority of the issues. But if we seemingly decide to deal with only young people within our various political parties, then we'll be skewed to just a few number of issues. I think the politics is important, but we need to cast the net wide. We need to look at issues of education, issues of health, issues of unemployment, that young people would have to deal with, and all these things somehow help us in dealing with the general issues we find in society. I think it's important to have development projects going on, but we need to deal with the human development aspect. And the human development aspect demands that those who form a majority of the population should also gain some kind of attention, and that is where I think the issues of young people come in. They form a majority of the population, and so their issues necessarily have to gain attention. I think that is where I expect our various political parties to come in, stretch an olive branch to the young people, and expect that these young people will actively participate. And let me just make a little appeal to the National Youth Authority. They are the main body responsible for the development of young people and coordinating general youth work. We expect that the National Youth Authority will come out with an action plan to the youth policy. That should be a general blueprint for every political party preparing a manifesto, so that they know that as a country we have agreed on a set of provisions, and that is what we should go by.
All right. Thank you so much, Emmanuel Ashon. And Emmanuel is with the Children and Youth in Broadcasting. It's a young people's development advocacy group. Behind the News is live. Now, a couple of text messages. This one from Nangudi in Du. The 3 years of the NDC is far better than NPP's 8 years in terms of development. Emmanuel Tamakoin, who says, why should the NDC wait to the election year before turning their attention to the votes region? Our minds are made up. Another one, good work, GBC. We pray you will become developed like BBC. But please, GTV is not coming in Tamale. we want to watch Country 12. Yes, it will come and you'll be able to watch it live and also listen to commentary live on Radio Ghana. That's it for tonight's edition of Behind the News. It came to you live from our studios here, Broadcasting House in Accra, and at gbcghana.com. The program is always produced by Bright Agama, Kingsley Obinchue, Christopher Siedu, Edmund Tete, and John Poby. Sound engineer for tonight, Samuel Oulakuejei. My name, Abraham Asari. A good weekend is yours.